The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, we start this morning with two significant developments from the Middle East and Ukraine. Last evening, Israel carried out what it called a precision airstrike on a building in Doha in an attempt to kill the political leaders of Hamas, including the negotiating team discussing the latest ceasefire proposals. Six people were killed in the strike, including the son of the Hamas key negotiator and also a member of Qatar's internal security forces killed. US President Donald Trump has expressed his unhappiness about the strike, having only found out about it, he says, through the US military. Meantime, 4,000 kilometres away, another sovereign jurisdiction not at war was defending itself. Poland has overnight been scrambling aircraft alongside its allies to shoot down what it calls hostile objects violating its airspace during a Russian attack on Ukraine. Now, this marks the first time a NATO country has had to shoot down Russian objects entering its airspace. In a moment, we'll get full analysis on both from Scott Lucas. But first, let's start with that attack in Qatar. We're joined by Asher Friedman, former Israeli strategic affairs official and executive director of the Misgav Institute for National Security. Asher, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Will you explain to us the rationale for Israel actually going and bombing Doha, which is the capital of a sovereign state?
Absolutely. The Hamas leadership abroad, it's not the political leadership, it's not the negotiating team. It's the people who are actively planning, financing, arming Hamas terror in Gaza, in Judea and Samaria, in the West Bank, and in many other locations. Israel has declared that it intends to eliminate Hamas as the dominant governing and military power in Gaza. And a key aspect of that is taking out Hamas leaders. Now, Doha, far before the negotiations, chose to host these Hamas leaders to allow them to live lives of luxury and to continue planning their terror attacks from Doha. They gathered there, and Israel took advantage of the opportunity to conduct, as you said, a surgical strike to eliminate these terrorist leaders.
Okay. Now, the declaration from Netanyahu and from Israel, the Israeli current Israeli government generally at the moment, is that you will target Hamas wherever they gather. Is that so?
Correct.
Okay, so
that's the government.
So if a peace delegation goes, for example, to the United Nations in New York, would Israel put a bomb in the UN building? If they went to London, if they came to Dublin, would Israel bomb sovereign states like Britain, Ireland, the United States?
I think that's a question.
It's based on the principle. Now, the fact that you wouldn't dare bomb the United States, that's for sure. You wouldn't dare bomb London. But the principle is the same, a sovereign state being bombed by Israel. That's the principle.
The principle is that when there are, again, I don't speak for the Israeli government, of course, we're an independent policy center, but the principle is that when there are gatherings of terrorist leaders actively involved in planning terror attacks against Israel, the fact that they're being held in Doha or in Tehran or in Beirut or wherever they might be does not grant them immunity from being responsible for their actions. I highly doubt that London or Dublin or New York would host terrorist leaders actively involved in planning attacks against Israel.
In the event, for example, we had peace talks between members of the IRA and members of the British government, and the British government said they'd never talk to terrorists. In the event, they did, of course. But would in a situation like that, where a sovereign government like the British government decided to be the mediator, would that make them an appropriate target for Israel?
First of all, Israel has declared, it declared right away when President Trump proposed this latest peace plan, that it accepted the peace plan, and that if Hamas would release the hostages, that would be the end of the war. Hamas, this wasn't widely reported, but Hamas right away, one of its senior officials said, we reject this peace plan. We're not willing to release all the hostages. To your question, Israel did not target any Qataris.
One was killed. So it's just too bad for that person, the member of the Qatari security forces, too bad for them and their family that they just happened to be there. Is that the attitude of Israel?
No, Israel's attitude is that it carries out precision strikes that are unprecedented. I mean, no other country in the world has carried out strikes with such precision in any of these arenas. There's really no other precedent, not in the US, not in the UK, not in any other country that's been involved in combating terror. I've heard of these reports as well. One has to wonder maybe what, if Qatar was providing security for Hamas, but Israel's intention was not to attack or target Qatar. Its intention was to target these Hamas leaders that
I've heard this story before. It was not our intention to kill children in Gaza. However, there was some Hamas operative in the building, in the apartment building where those children were killed. Too bad. That's what you call precision strikes, is it?
Precision strikes, if I can be allowed to say, are when Israel takes steps that are unprecedented by any other military in combating terror to separate between the civilian population and the terrorist groups. Now, that's clearly more difficult when the terrorists are in hospitals, are in schools, are in homes, as is in the situation of Gaza. And again, Israel goes to unprecedented lengths beyond what any other democracy fighting terror has done to target only terrorists. But when those terrorists put their terror infrastructure, again, their rockets, their terror tunnels, in hospitals, in schools, unfortunately and tragically, really tragically for the people of Gaza and for the people of the region, there are civilian casualties. And Israel does its best to avoid that. But in fighting terror, there's no perfect, but I would suggest, and I hope you would agree, we wouldn't want terrorists to have immunity just because they put their rockets in a school. Nobody would want to live in a world where terrorists can carry out terror attack against civilians and get a free pass just because they decide to locate their rocket in a school or in a hospital. I think that would be bad for the citizens of all democracies.
But it's moral bankruptcy to suggest that you can target a school full of children simply because you believe one Hamas operative might be operating from the upper floor of that building. That is morally bankrupt.
I do not believe there's ever been a case like that. Israel intends to combat Hamas's stronghold in Gaza, in the Gaza City. It hasn't. The fact is, it hasn't been doing that yet because it's issuing evacuation orders for the civilians, saying go to safe areas where there's aid available, where we're not carrying out military operations. And it's waiting, and it's issuing more warnings and more leaflets and more phone calls until those civilians exit
now,
the area.
So your contention is if Hamas released all the hostages, those who are dead, and returned the bodies of those who are not to their families, that there would be a ceasefire. Netanyahu has declared otherwise. He's going all the way to destroy Gaza. End of. That's his declaration.
No, incorrect. Yesterday, both he and Foreign Minister Saar said openly and explicitly that they accept the terms of President Trump's deal, or President Trump's latest proposal, which would, if the hostages are released, would lead to an end of the war. And they accepted it right away, and Hamas rejected it right away.
Now, it's interesting that, you know, as they accept a proposal from the United States, which, as you know, also has a huge military base in Qatar and sees Qatar as one of its allies in the region, that even as those proposals were being discussed by Hamas and allegedly by Israel, Israel is planning a surgical strike on the very negotiators.
Again, Hamas,
I mean, that is just cynical in the extreme. And the suggestion is that Netanyahu, by taking upon himself the decision, which he said was his alone, not America's, that he was actually playing President Trump. They didn't let the Americans know until far too late, who then tried to alert the Qataris. But the bombs dropped 10 minutes before the Americans could alert their own ally in Qatar.
Israel has said repeatedly, including the last few weeks, including by our chief of staff, that Hamas leaders anywhere are not immune to attack if they're involved in terror against Israel. President Trump also has issued numerous warnings against Hamas, against its leadership. I don't know. I'm not privy to the details of what level of coordination there was between Israel and the United States. I expect that if there was military activity around Qatari airspace, the U.S. was probably updated, but that's just my assumption.
Well, I don't know. In your institute, you probably monitored everything that happened in Qatar yesterday. You may have seen the Qatari prime minister giving exact timings when the bombs dropped, and 10 minutes later, the Americans called them. Now, either the Americans and Trump is being very cynical, or the Israelis are being very cynical. But the Qataris were the innocent parties in this regard.
I mean, it's interesting. Qatar, because of its natural gas and because of its vast funds, has managed to create this image in the world of this sort of good faith negotiator. In truth, Qatar and Hamas share the same Muslim Brotherhood ideology, and Qatar's goal from the outset has been to ensure Hamas survives in Gaza. Now, of course, Israel does not mean that Israel intended to target Qatar. It did not intend to target Qatar, intended to target Hamas, but we should recognize the fact that Qatar has been acting, and I know this is not popular to say, but this is the reality, much more as Hamas's lawyer rather than as a good faith negotiator. I guess, I mean, again, even terrorists deserve lawyers, right? So it's okay that they have a lawyer.
Okay, so if they share the ideology of Hamas, that makes them Israel's enemy and therefore open season on Qatar, except that you can't have open season when you've got a massive American base based in Qatar.
I explicitly said that that was not the case. Qatar promotes radical Islamist ideology across the region, against moderate regimes across the region, but it's not actively involved in terror. Iran is actively involved in attacking Israel. Hezbollah is actively involved in attacking Israel. Qatar is not, and therefore Qatar is, of course, not a target for Israeli military actions. The Hamas leadership meeting in Doha was the target of a very precise strike.
Now, do you believe that all of this helps in any way to get the release of the hostages?
I do. I believe that Hamas is interested in its survival. That's its goal. It wants to maintain control. If it feels that the only way that it's going to survive is by releasing the hostages, it's likely to release the hostages. If it feels that by being in Doha or by dragging out negotiations, it gets a free pass from the international community, if it feels that through its libels and false claims, it gets international sympathy, it gets international recognition, it has zero incentive to release the hostages. Only when it feels real pressure will it release the hostages. And I think that this step will move us in that direction, God willing.
Now, just the latest development, I suppose, as far as Israel's concerned, is the speech by Ursula von der Leyen this morning. She said, man-made famine can never be a weapon of war. This must stop. EU aid to Gaza far outweighs that of any other partner, but of course Europe needs to do more. And here are measures for a way forward, putting our bilateral support for Israel on hold without affecting civil society or Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum. New proposals on sanctions on extremist ministers and violent settlers, partial suspension of the association agreement on trade-related matters, and setting up a Palestine donor group, including a dedicated instrument for Gaza reconstruction. I mean, you've annoyed Ursula von der Leyen because she has kind of resisted those trade sanctions for a while. She's not resisting anymore.
Israel has demonstrated with every piece of concrete evidence the vast amount of aid and food that's going into Gaza for more than any other warring party has ever provided an enemy force in history. Now, if the EU wants to continue believing Hamas health ministry claims that there's a famine, that's unfortunate because you can go there and see the trucks that are entering. It shouldn't, you know, it's not a difficult question to determine the truth about. And I would suggest that when the EU, France, others, essentially rewards Hamas's refusal to release the hostages, rewards Hamas's use of libels and human shields by sanctioning Israel, by giving a unilateral recognition of a Palestinian state, they're only strengthening Hamas in Gaza. And by the way, Hamas is by far the most popular party in the West Bank and the Palestinian Authority. By strengthening Hamas, they're leading to a good chance, God forbid, that Hamas takes over the West Bank whenever Palestinian President Abbas departs the stage. It's very, very irresponsible, and it's undermining the chances for peace and stability.
Would you not accept that Netanyahu, by prolonging the war to possibly save his own political skin, is the culprit here?
But again, Netanyahu said, if Hamas releases the hostages, the war ends tomorrow. He said that openly and explicitly. Foreign Minister Saar said it openly and explicitly. So that I don't think that argument holds up.
All right. Look, thank you very much for joining us. Asher Friedman, former Israeli strategic affairs official, executive director of the Misgav Institute for National Security. Listening to that conversation, Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Scott, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
Now, listening to that conversation, I mean, the justification from Israel, I tried to challenge him every bit of the way. The real question, I suppose, is, did America know? Is Trump just saying he didn't know for optics? And is America as complicit in this attack on a sovereign ally as Israel?
Yeah. Before I answer that, Pat, because of that torrent of propaganda, let me tell you about some other real points, and I'll get to that question. First, let us be clear. The Israeli attack on Qatar was on Hamas's negotiators for the settlement that Israel supposedly is pursuing. Hamas is a political organization. You might not like it. I certainly don't like the fact that their military branch was involved in the mass killing of October 2023, but they are distinct from the military branch, which is the Al-Qassam Brigades. They are not terrorists in the sense that Mr. Friedman was portraying them. It would be the equivalent, Pat, to bring it close to home, as if the British had launched a targeted assassination of the leadership of Sinn Féin as they were negotiating the Good Friday Agreement in the 1990s. Secondly, Israel violated all standards of international law and sovereignty by attacking these leaders inside Qatar. It just so happens that Qatar is a major U.S. ally with the largest U.S. military base in the Middle East. But it is a principle of international law that you do not go into another country and bomb and assassinate it. Now, to
the question, was America complicit, do you think? Yeah. And did it suit Trump? Did they give him deniability?
Yeah, let me just set this up very quickly, Pat, in terms of what we know and what is out there. Israeli officials initially said that they had coordinated the attack with the Americans. They then walked that back a bit later because I think they knew that sounded a bit bad. And they said, well, we notified the U.S. military before the attack took place. What the Americans have said is, oh, well, you know, eventually the U.S. military told the political leadership, and that Donald Trump's purported envoy, Steve Witkoff, notified the Qataris. But the Qataris say, we didn't get that notification until 10 minutes after the bombs began to fall. So they are absolutely furious. They had no heads up about this. As they did, for example, when Iran struck inside Qatar a few months ago during the Israeli war. This time they didn't even get the heads up. Now the Trump administration is caught here between a rock and a hard place. If they say the story is that they were notified about the attack, but that they were not involved in basically coordinating it, they look weak. They look weak because Netanyahu has gone ahead with an attack inside the territory of a U.S. ally, completely undermining the negotiations being pursued by a U.S. envoy. If they say they coordinated with the Israelis, they gave the go-ahead for this, they are complicit in an attack on that American ally. So there is no good answer for them.
Okay, but there's no doubt that the Israelis would have told the Americans, certainly moments before the attack, that they were coming in, because they wouldn't want the aircraft, the American aircraft in Qatar, to be scrambled and shoot them down.
Yeah, let me give you an important precedent, Pat. I don't think anybody has picked up on this. They absolutely had to notify the U.S. military because of the reasons that you talk about. Now, remember back in June, Pat, that the Israelis notified the Americans that they had planes that were en route to go into Iran to carry out further attacks? And you remember that at that point, Donald Trump, who was seeing his chance of a Nobel Peace Prize slip away, told Netanyahu to turn the planes around. Now, on that occasion, Netanyahu couldn't turn the planes around, but the Israelis limited their strikes to one token strike inside Israel. What the Israelis did this time, I suspect, Pat, is they gave the Americans notification that this was coming, but they didn't give the Americans enough time to veto. They didn't give Trump the chance to pull Netanyahu back from those.
So Trump again being played by Netanyahu, which we've believed for some time, in the same way as being played by Putin. And because many of the grown-ups in the room have been fired by Trump or by Hegseth, you don't really have wise heads to say to the president, Mr. President, cop onto yourself.
Well, and the bottom line is the U.S. is going to back Israeli when push comes to shove. I mean, let's link this back to Gaza. Fact of the matter is that when the Israelis walked away from the negotiations at the start of March, and that was the last time that they had seriously negotiated, and there was no phase two, when they expanded the military operations, when they cut off humanitarian aid into Gaza, the Trump administration covered that. Indeed, Donald Trump said, you know what? We should look at displacing the Gazan population so we can make this a Riviera of the Middle East. When the starvation began to take effect inside Gaza, and this is why Mr. Friedman has really upset me, to pretend that Israel has carried out the largest aid operation when they, in fact, are starving dozens. When that was done, Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, and his ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, toured a PR tour of these Israeli aid points, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which are the points where more than 1,500 Palestinians have been killed trying to get a very small amount of aid. So they backed them on that. When Israel would not listen to the ceasefire proposals, which were American proposals that were all but accepted by Hamas last month. And again, Mr. Friedman is being very deceptive here. Hamas had said, we will accept these proposals. When Netanyahu refused to consider them, the Americans gave him leeway to do so. And finally, a few days before this attack on Qatar, even if Trump did not know it was coming, Trump said, Hamas, this is your final warning. Even though they had accepted terms for a ceasefire, he effectively, with that type of tweet, sort of nodded to the Israelis and said, do what you have to do.
The last, we have to be brief on the bombing or the shooting down of Russian drones over Poland. I mean, is this to be seen as a skirmish or an unintentional incursion and something we shouldn't get too alarmed about or otherwise?
Signal to the Russians, you don't get a free ride now in terms of your aerial attacks on Ukraine, because it wasn't just the Poles involved in this. It was also the Netherlands, Italy, and the United States. But Pat, you need to link it up to a couple of wider things. One, the discussions of the security guarantees, which would take place once the Russian invasion is halted. And two, Europe's discussions with U.S. officials this week about finally toughening the sanction on Russia and its trading partners.
Scott, thank you very much for joining us on the line. I'm sure we'll hear more about all of this throughout the day. That's Professor Scott Lucas from the Clinton Institute at UCD.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.